The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So last week in the discussion, the topic of thoughts and thinking came up, and I said that's what I would talk about. And in reflecting on this topic, I've decided to talk about it for the next couple of weeks, maybe even three sessions. I'm here for the next 2 weeks, and then I'll be away teaching retreat for 2 weeks. But so I'm here this week and next week, and then I'll be away for the following 2 weeks. And then when I come back, I was thinking I could pick up on this topic yet again. So the first way I'd like to look at this is looking at thoughts, working with thoughts in our meditation practice. And then next week, I thought I would talk about looking at thoughts in our daily lives. There's a difference. In our meditation practice, we tend to let go of thinking as much as possible. Our work is to come into the present moment, into the felt experience of the here and now. And in general, thinking, the thinking process tends to keep us from the here and now. Often we're thinking about the past or the future or even about the present moment, but in the thinking about the present moment, we're not experiencing so much the actuality of the present moment. So in our meditation practice, our task is to, when we notice that we're thinking, we try to let it go and come back to the present moment. And I'll talk about that today, how to work with thinking today in our meditation. In our daily lives, we need to think. We need to know what we're thinking. We need to plan. We need to communicate. So it's really helpful to, in our daily lives, be able to learn how to be aware while thinking. And this is it's got some slightly different skills to it. So I'll talk about that next week. And then the following week, I thought I might talk about some of the Buddha's recommendations about working with thoughts that, in my view, applies to both meditation practice and daily life practice. So how does that sound? Does that sound okay? So for working with thoughts in daily life, because of this, what I just said, that in our meditation practice, we tend to try to let go of thoughts. We let go of the thinking that's happening. We tend to have this view of thoughts and thinking as kind of an enemy when we're meditating. We are angry with ourselves when we realize that we're thinking, or we're frustrated, or we're self-judgmental when we realize that we're thinking. And I'd like to kind of normalize this. You know, the function of our sense doors is to take in experience. You know, our eyes take in sight, our ears take in sound, our tongue takes in taste, our body takes in touch, our nose takes in smell, and then the sixth sense, in terms of the understanding of the Buddhist understanding of the six sense bases, is that the mind is like a sense door. And it takes in the contents of the mind. It takes in moods, emotions, thoughts. And it's a little different than our other sense bases because, our sights and eyes, our eyes receive experience from kind of the outside world. Our five sense bases are designed, I think, to connect us to the outside world. This is how we navigate the world, through contact of the world with our bodies. So we see sights, we hear sounds. Those sights and sounds are often, sounds can be internally generated, the gurgling of the stomach or hearing the high-pitched tone when we're in silence. And sights can be internally generated when we close our eyes and see colors and images. But in general, our Our sense bases are designed to take in information from the world, from the outside world. And our mind has two purposes. It both creates experience. I mean, it every sight has a consciousness to it. So every sight, every sound, every taste, every smell, every touch has a mental component of recognition. So our mind does that work. It does the work of emotions and moods and feelings. And so the mind has this property of kind of creating content, and then it has this property of also experiencing what it's created. This is kind of the amazing part of our minds, that it can know that it knows. And so part of the function of our mind is to produce stuff, produce ideas, emotions, moods, to produce the recognition of sights, of sounds, to produce thoughts. So that's part of the function of our mind, to produce thoughts. Another part of the function of our mind is to recognize what it's produced. So that's kind of like being, so the way I look at it is that this, the sense base of the mind is kind of like the eye, and then the contents of the mind are kind of like the sights. So thoughts, thinking, emotions, moods, all of that is like what we see. So the mind is a little different from our other sense bases in that it both produces and experiences what it creates. So with our meditative experience, we begin to just recognize what's happening in our experience. We recognize sights are happening, sounds, body experience, and we recognize emotions, we recognize moods, we recognize thoughts are happening. So the eye receives sights, the mind receives thoughts. So the practice in meditation isn't so much to try to stop the processes of the mind, to stop thinking, to stop thoughts from happening, but to recognize that they are happening. Now I want to make a distinction here between, and I'll just use this terminology today, between thought and thinking. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there's a kind of the mind produces a thought, and if it's recognized, oh, there's a thought, often it doesn't do too much more than that. If it's not recognized as a thought, then we tend to start thinking about it. So that there's another process that happens, the thinking process, which picks up on thought. And that tends to be where we get lost from the present moment. It seems as though something about the thinking process grabs the attention and prevents it from kind of being here and now. Now, in our daily lives, we begin to see that it's possible actually to think and be aware while thinking. But it is challenging. And so in our meditation practice, it's the thinking that we try to let go of, this kind of proliferation, this chaining of one thought after another. That's what we try to let go of. And we all recognize this. We all know what this is. And we all recognize that often when we end up in that thinking, where we're chaining off thinking about something that happened to us yesterday or something that we're thinking about might happen tomorrow, we often see that we lose track of the here and now. Our mind creates this thought world, kind of a bubble where we, you know, take birth into this world and we're moving and living and experiencing in that world. It's like this whole movie is going on in our minds, and that's where we're living, and we're not connecting with what's happening here and now. So that's the kind of thinking that we make an effort to let go of in our meditation. thoughts will happen in our meditation. We will be sitting in meditation and, you know, we'll hear the truck outside. And then, poof, an image of a truck appears in our mind, and there's a thought of a truck. It's not something we can necessarily stop from happening, but we can recognize that it's happening. So I'd like to kind of go through different ways that we experience thinking, different strengths of thinking, and talk about different ways of working with this in our meditation practice today. So the simplest kind of thinking often occurs when, you know, we're sitting in meditation and the energy to stay connected with the breath of the present moment, whatever we're noticing in the present moment, the energy to stay connected with that lowers a little bit and the mind kind of just ends up drifting off. It's kind of like the mind's habit of thinking is a little bit stronger than our habit of staying in the present moment. And so that thinking process just kind of takes over and we drift off into thinking about yesterday or tomorrow or whatever. And often this does happen off of some sense impression, you know, that we feel something in our, you know, in our knee or something. And it reminds us that we spent a lot of time kneeling in the garden yesterday. And then we think about our garden. And then we think about what we're going to plant in the garden. And just the mind just kind of drifts off. But it often comes out of some experience in the present moment that there's a connection. Our minds are very associative. So, you know, some experience in the present moment will link to some thought and then we'll start just drifting off. So if there's that kind of drifting quality to the thinking in the meditation, often actually that kind of feels pleasant. I mean, it's almost a daydream that we move into. There's a kind of pleasant quality to that. If it's that kind of thinking, there's not much that you need to do. At some point you recognize it, right? I mean, you're drifting off in thought, and you're not particularly mindful while you're drifting off in thought. There's nothing you can do about it while you're drifting off in thought. And there's kind of a trick question here. What's the instruction when you're drifting off in thought? What's the instruction there when you're drifting off in thought?
Remember the breath.
You can't remember it consciously. So when you're drifting off in thought, there's no instruction. We have to wait for mindfulness to kind of come back. So mindfulness comes back in the midst of drifting off in thought. And then we have an instruction that we can work with. And the first instruction to work with there is notice that mindfulness has come back. So recognize awareness has returned in that moment. Then it's helpful to kind of take in what awareness has become present to. So mindfulness has returned, poof, into the midst of something. What have you become aware of? Thinking about the garden, you know, or, you know, remembering, perhaps, remembering. And then if that thought is relatively, you know, if it has that drifting quality, then we can make a choice and consciously, oh, you know, that's just a kind of a low energy drifting. You know, it's not that it's got so much pull to it. Can we let that thought go in favor of coming back to the present moment? I find it helpful in particular with this kind of drifting, wandering thought to actually acknowledge the feeling that has been produced. So, you know, often that kind of drifting, wandering, you know, that daydreamy kind of thought that's low energy is pleasant. So take that in. Take in the fact that there's a pleasantness that has happened. See if you can let go of that the thinking in favor of feeling the pleasantness, and then reconnect with the experience. Often I find in that kind of drifting, the body actually has relaxed a little bit. You can use that relaxation and that kind of settling that's happened to just reconnect with the breath. If we have the attitude around that remembering that we have to kind of yank ourselves back to the present moment, well, we're already back in the first place, right? When we remember, we're already back. So there's no need to yank ourselves anywhere. We are present already. We can, in that recognition of presence and acknowledging the thought, choose then to direct our attention to some other experience, to the breath. And in the that kind of calm choosing, we can stay connected with any settling that has happened when the mind wanders off. Actually, I find this kind of settling happens way more than I used to think it did. I think that the relationship that we have of, oh, I'm thinking, come back, that disturbs the mind. You know, that agitates the mind to have that relationship with thinking. And when I began to recognize that in the waking up into thought, if I could take in, well, what's actually happening here and now, more often than I realized, there had been a settling and a relaxing that had happened. And so it was easy to then apply that to the experience of breathing. So that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of easiest level of thought, in a way, as long as you can have a relationship with it that's not harsh and judgmental about coming back, it can actually support the settling and quieting of the mind. It's almost like sometimes that kind of thinking is a manifestation of letting go. It's just that there isn't quite enough energy in the mind to see that letting go. We often do find, though, that when we recognize thinking, you know, we've gone off of something, and it started this way. You know, it started by just wandering out into the garden or wandering into the shopping mall or whatever it does. And at some point in our wandering, at some point in the mind's doing its wandering, it meets something that it has an opinion about, let's say. It meets something that it likes. It meets something that it doesn't like. It sees a friend in the shopping mall, and you start talking to your friend in the shopping mall, and you start arguing with your friend in the shopping mall, and then you get angry. And then there's a little bit of charge behind the thinking. And this can happen really fast. You know, this can happen in the space of seconds, fractions of a second even, that we can move into this kind of charge to our thinking. And so when we have a charge like that, when we wake up into the thinking, when there's a charge like that, often there's kind of a pull. You know, there's a connection, there's a tug to stay in that world. It's like there's something the mind feels somehow it's really important to figure that out, or really important to figure out how I'm going to say this to my friend so that I make just the right point. So there's a pull, there's a tug. So when thoughts are stronger, when we have a sense of it being a, there's a charge to our thoughts, it's helpful to pay a little more direct attention to the thinking itself. So the first thing to do with it is to first acknowledge or recognize the kind of thinking that's happening. Often a single kind of note or word to acknowledge is helpful. Something like planning, remembering, judging, fantasizing, arguing, describing. rather than, so this is connecting somewhat with the content of the thought, to acknowledge that this kind of content is happening. But it's not getting into the details of the content. So if arguing is happening, you know, you're just acknowledging, yep, arguing is happening. As opposed to, you know, going more into the detail of arguing with that friend about this topic. So the kind of acknowledgement or gentle recognition with mindfulness of content, it's helpful to kind of take a step back from the details of the content to just a kind of a broad brush overview of the type of thinking that's happening. As you do that, as you make this a practice in your meditation, you'll probably start to recognize that there's certain themes that repeat. You'll start to recognize that you frequently are noting planning, or you're frequently noting arguing. So you'll kind of come up with your top three tunes of the way you think. This is helpful. It's helpful for us to begin to know what kind of patterns our minds fall into. It's also helpful if you find a particular pattern that repeats a lot, to find a kind of humorous way to acknowledge it. So, you know, you might find that you're kind of doing this self-justifying, whining tone. Oh, but it should be this way. And, you know, so, you know, just coming up with some kind of humorous, whiny me, you know, something like that, just some silly recognition. Adding a little bit of humor to the recognition can help kind of separate our entanglement with it. So finding a way to meet it with a little bit of humor can be helpful. If the thinking is really strong, you find over and over again, you keep repeating back to a similar pattern, a similar content over and over. Like you keep coming back to the arguing with your friend in the mall over and over again. You keep coming back to that. You let it go, come back to the breath, and that same kind of thought world keeps coming back. Then it's often helpful to see if there's some emotion underneath that's wanting to be acknowledged. So often kind of repetitive thought patterns are fueled by some kind of emotion underneath them. Anger, perhaps, in this case, of arguing with the friend in the mall. So there's anger that's present. Or frustration, perhaps. So acknowledging the emotion, it's like the emotion is kind of perhaps the source in a way. It's possible that we've wandered into a thought because of associations. You know, we've heard a car drive by, and then we envision ourselves in a car, and then we're in a shopping mall, and, you know, it's just kind of that wandering thing. But then we meet our friend in the shopping mall, and the pattern of the arguing appears, and it creates the anger. And then the anger itself fuels the repetitive thoughts. One of my teachers says that thoughts come off of emotion like mud comes off a flywheel. You have an image of a spinning flywheel that's got mud on it. You know, the mud just flings off of that flywheel. And in a similar way, thoughts tend to have this churning, spinning kind of energy. I mean, emotions have this spinning energy. We can even feel it kind of as a spinning energy. And thoughts will just be produced off of that emotion. So if we can acknowledge the emotion that is underneath thoughts, often the thoughts will subside. It's kind of like the thoughts are the emotion's way of saying, pay attention to me. And the familiar way that we have of paying attention often to this kind of thing is to pay attention to the content of the thoughts, as opposed to paying attention to the experience of the emotion. But often if we actually turn our attention to the actual experience of the emotion, how does it feel in the body? Emotions almost always have some kind of felt sense, particularly in the torso. And if you can connect with the feeling of the emotion, sometimes, at least for a time, the thoughts will diminish. The thoughts will settle because the emotion is kind of getting the attention that it's asking for. Sometimes when there's strong thinking, we might not... know so much what the emotion is. You know, it might not be obvious to us. I had an example of this or an experience of this at one point where my mind was just off in thought. There was a kind of a doubting flavor to the thinking, you know, and I decided to ask a question. It was in one of my retreats. I decided to ask a question about doubt. And as I thought about how I would phrase that question, as I, you know, thought about, well, how do I want to talk about this doubt that I'm experiencing? I saw that every single way that I began to phrase this question in my mind began with the words, I'm afraid. And that kind of made me sit up and take notice, you know, that it's like, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. Every phrase that I was thinking about in terms of constructing this question had those two words. And I thought, well, gosh, maybe this isn't doubt, maybe this is fear. And when I started to, and I never got to ask my question, but when I started to then look in my experience, I did see there was fear everywhere. And it had been this kind of slight connecting with the content of the thoughts to see the story kind of behind the thought. Sometimes the story of the thought can help us to identify the emotion. You know, I'm afraid, pointed fear out to me. So getting familiar in your own mind with the way your mind speaks can help to point you to what the emotion is underneath. Again, this is a connection a little bit with the content of the thoughts to point us to what's happening underneath, to point us to more directly to the emotions. I have just one more piece to mention, and then I'll open it up for discussion. Oh, actually, I have two more pieces. And what I'd like to do, well, actually, let's take some questions now, and then I'll move into the next piece. I'll see how if there's any questions. Yeah.
So I got something in the very beginning of your talk about, it just really helped me conceptualize something that I can use in meditating, which is, you know, that the mind manufactures or creates thought. And I've begun to accept that. Okay, thought. So what I thought I was understanding was, so while I'm meditating, a thought will happen. It'll happen indefinitely over and over again. So then I realized, okay, But I don't have to investigate each thought, or which then could translate into I don't have to. If I don't have to investigate, I don't have to react to it. It's just they're just going to keep going.
Just a thought.
Yeah. But now what you were just saying was, you know, getting to the maybe an understanding of the underneath it, the emotion. Now, this is still, you're still talking about while meditating.
Yes.
Right? So I'm a little confused because it means I don't want to investigate that.
So I prefaced this by saying that if the thoughts are stronger, if you let it go, come back, let it go, and it keeps coming back, that's when you want to investigate.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just a thought, you know, it's just something appearing in the mind. When you recognize it, you know, when you can recognize, oh, there's an image or there's a thought, you know, just the recognition of it, often it will kind of just dissipate. You know, there's no need to do anything with it. It just appears as a formation and then disappears. But when the thinking has gone on for a while, or it's got a pull to it, you know, you feel like it's got a tug to it. You know, if it's gone on for a while and it's that drifting thing I talked about at first, just let it go. You know, come recognize that you've been thinking and come back. If there's a tug, you know, if there's a, oh, I really want to stay in that fantasy. Oh, that feels, you know, oh, yeah, I'm liking that. You know, there's some wanting there. You know, there's it's if it's hard to let go of, that's when we start investigating.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sue.
Thanks. Same token that strong thoughts came back. So I checked with my emotion, and when I check it, don't know.
You don't know what the emotion is.
I didn't know. So I said, don't know. I know, don't know. What this emotion is, I don't know. And never had an answer, you know, what it is.
Was there a feeling in the body?
Feeling still vague.
Vague. Mm-hmm. The feeling is vague. But there's a kind of, is it a strong thought that there's a kind of a pull to?
Yes.
Okay. But you're not so clear on the feeling, on what the emotion is.
You're right.
And that's fine. I mean, just notice that there's this pull, you know, whatever that pull is to the thinking, that's a kind of a doorway to noticing the feeling. So that just, can you connect with that, that feeling of wanting to go to the thinking?
Just, so you're saying, what you're saying is notice my impulse of the thought.
Yes. Notice that the wish to kind of stay enmeshed in that thinking, the desire to kind of stay connected to it. If it's strong, it's often got that pull to it. You know, you want to think about it for some reason. If it keeps coming up, also there tends to be a pull back to it for some reason. So noticing that pull, and also just taking in the climate or the kind of environment of the body, even if it's vague, you're just kind of taking that in. And again, you know, you might see if there's any highlighted words in that thinking. You know, this last piece that I brought in, you know, as I noticed, you know, I'm afraid kept coming up. It's like, well, you know, afraid. Well, maybe there's some fear here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's a kind of a thread, some words that keep popping up that have an emotional content or tone to them, see, you might check in and say, is that emotion there? So, you know, the thoughts, you know, you might be having an arguing thought with a friend, and, you know, the thing is, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. That tends to be a kind of a self-righteousness, you know. You can look at the content a little bit and see if there's some specific words that might point you to mm-hmm. what an emotion might be.
So you're saying it's just pick up the obvious sort of, I said vague, but sort of a little bit standing out thoughts or pick up that words instead of saying, don't know, right?
You could investigate a little bit to see if you can recognize if there's any pointer in the thinking to an emotion. Mm-hmm. It's fine to say don't know. Mm-hmm. It's fine to say don't know and to just connect with whatever is present, whatever is in the feeling, even if it's a vague feeling. Another thing you could do instead of saying don't know, well, acknowledge the feeling is vague. Mm-hmm. You know, vague feeling is happening.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Thanks.
Yeah, Arthur. And then I want to do another exploration after this question.
So, which comes first, the emotion or the thought? Or another way for me to ask that, that's really the question, but there's another element to it in the way I'm thinking of it, is what's the relationship between an event in one's experience, something happens, the emotions and the thoughts?
Okay, so the first part of the question is what comes first, the emotion or the thought? And that one, either one can come first. So, for example, in the example I was describing, you know, you're kind of drifting off into thought, and then there's a thinking that starts to happen, and then your mind in the thinking process through its associative nature stumbles into something that we have an emotion about. And in that case, the thought, in a way, creates the emotion. You know, we stumble into an argument with the friend, and we start arguing with the friend, and it constructs in our experience the frustration or the self-righteousness or the anger. Then that emotion itself will produce thoughts. So that emotion itself kind of becomes a kind of a nexus in our minds, and it draws in all kinds of other energy, and it starts drawing in, you know, oh, well, they shouldn't have said that, and they should have done that, and I should have done this instead of that, and then it kind of is the emotion producing thoughts. So it can happen both ways. Now it seems to me that many of my emotions do come from some kind of thinking. There does have to be some kind of recognition. For example, hearing on the radio about the tsunami. You know, there's an event that happens in the world, and there's hearing about it. The hearing itself isn't creating the emotional response. It's thoughts in my mind about the, you know, it's kind of like my images in my mind about the devastation, and my reaction to that creates the feelings of sadness, of sorrow, of compassion, of wanting to help. In most of my experience, the emotions come out of some kind of thought. There's something that's happened in the mind. Now, there can be, I have seen there are times when it's like the body kind of goes into a state without thought. And, you know, one of the main ways, I see there's a number of women here who might relate to this story. At this stage in my life, I have a lot of hot flashes. And so there's a kind of a chemical release that happens, a bodily thing that happens that is unrelated to thought. You know, I'm just, you know, walking down the street and my body gets flooded with these hormones. That flooding of hormones, and I would assume that this can happen in other ways in hot flashes, but it's just the most obvious one in my experience at this point. There's the flooding of the body with this hormone. And before, when this first started, I began recognizing, the first thing I'd recognize is, oh, there's this feeling in the body. And it feels like something's really wrong. So there's this feeling of like agitation and wrong happening. And the mind starts scanning, so what's wrong? What's wrong? And then I began to realize, oh, this is just a hormonal kind of flushing through the body. And it doesn't have, it's not grounded in thoughts. But before I really became clear and aware of it, it did produce thoughts. You know, it's like there's this flushing of the body with these hormones, and the mind started trying to figure out what was wrong. You know, it started thinking, you know, what did I do wrong? What did I forget? So it started thinking based on that kind of bodily going, the body going into emotion. So the body can actually move into emotion, and then thoughts can be produced from it. So the emotion can be first. But most of the time I see that thoughts are first, and then the emotion comes, and then thoughts come off of that. So does that, and I think I talked too about the event and the emotions and the thoughts too, so I think that covered pretty much the terrain of your question. So I do want to do one more piece. I want to do a brief kind of guided meditation to point you to another aspect of working with thought. And that is attending to the process versus the content of thinking. So we'll just settle for 2 minutes, and then we'll have about 3 or 4 minutes to explore this aspect of thinking. So just settling into your body, connecting with the breathing. So for the next few minutes in the meditation, I'd like you to count your thoughts. As we do this initially, the thoughts may hide for a bit, but they probably will start to appear. So just have the sense of waiting, envisioning your mind like a blank screen and just noticing each thought as it comes and counting it. There's no need to count the counting. Your thoughts may come as images, as words in the mind. No matter how they appear, just count each one. They may be kind of sneaky. They might kind of sneak up from behind and say, oh, haven't had many thoughts. And there's a thought. If you wake up into a long thought, just count that as one and go back to this process of counting your thoughts as they come up. So the point of this wasn't so much to come up with a number of how many thoughts you counted, but more to begin to get a sense of different ways, perhaps, that the mind produces thoughts. So how many of you experienced thoughts as if you were speaking to yourself, kind of sub-vocalizing the thoughts? That's a really common way to experience thoughts. How many of you experience thoughts as if you were hearing them? How many of you experience thoughts as if you were seeing images? And how many of you experience thoughts as though it were some kind of felt sense in the body? Any other ways that people experience thoughts that I didn't mention? Yeah.
Just words, not hearing the words, just words. So maybe seeing the words.
Seeing the words. Yeah, yeah, I've had that too occasionally. See, actually a visual field where the words are written out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have another way? Yeah. Uh-huh. So there's a kind of pull or intention to thinking that you've... Yeah, Arthur.
So this follows on that. I noticed that... I guess an analogy...
Why don't we use the mics? So
yeah. An analogy is the best way. It's like in a garden where the ground is the thoughts, and it was like they were constantly there, and only some arose that I noticed, but I knew... They, as you described them as sneaky, I knew there were many others there that
yes.
didn't arise that way.
Yes, there seems to be, at least in my experience, these different levels of thought there seems to be, you know, like you say, there's these some that kind of come above a threshold and they're kind of obvious, but there's kind of this constant commentary almost that we have. And when our minds get quiet in meditation, and particularly on retreat, we can really start to see this. You know, I remember on 1 3-month retreat, I would walk into the bathroom, and there was this constant narration. And then she turned on the light, and then she noticed that the light was flickering, and then she was like, "Will you stop already?" So that kind of commentary is—it's kind of the way we narrate our lives in a way. And so that begins to be revealed to us as we get more stable in meditation, and we see that we're thinking all the time, and we think we've made, you know, that we must be less settled than we were, but actually it's an indication that we're seeing more clearly this kind of lower level of thought that's not often quite so visible to us. And then there can be even kind of a lower level that, you know, James Baraz talks about it just being like these alien whispers. You don't really know what they're saying, but there's this sense of just this whispering going on all the time. So yes, there can be these different layers of thought. Partly in this exercise, I really wanted to point you to the different ways that we think. I saw that several of you had experiences of different kinds, some images, some hearing, some subvocal. Yeah, question, and do use the mic.
I don't know if this is a way of thinking, but it was a note that I noticed that, I mean, the way I was thinking was either visually or talking to myself. But like when I started a thought, there was worry behind it, either worry, and then there's a little mystery and intrigue in another way with that same thought. So, you know, the active mind is questioning things, and then also I noticed I was really worried environmentally or about something that was out of my control.
So that's kind of the underneath layer of the emotion. The worry is a kind of an emotion that's kind of that we can connect with separately from thought, actually. So we can connect with the feeling of the worry. So it's a slightly different thing. It's a mental experience. It's a mental state, let's say. The worry is a mental state. But I wouldn't exactly call it a thought, that there's a distinction between the mental state and the thinking and the thoughts.
The worry came from a thought. So, thinking back on it, I'm like, wow, I went into a worry stream.
Yeah. And as thoughts. I said in answering the previous question, that sometimes from a thought, an emotion will arise. And then from that emotion, then further thoughts will arise. Yeah.
So in trying to understand how meditation can help you just in general life, and because emotions are real and worry is maybe legitimate or fear might be a legitimate thing, the idea presumably then is that when you're not meditating, when you're actually just living your life, you acknowledge it. And does the meditation help you deal with it better?
In general, I would say yes, it does. That you know, the practice that we get with working with things in our meditation does over time translate into our daily lives. And then there are tools that we can use in our daily lives to use the mindfulness to begin to see when we're overreacting. I mean, I think the key in our daily lives is that we begin to see that there's a distinction between reactivity and response, and that reactivity often is coming out of, you know, fear or wanting, or, you know, there's this kind of push-pull kind of situation, and it's not a stable response coming from consideration and wisdom and care and generosity and kindness. It's much more me, or not that, or, you know, it's kind of this reactive thing. And so the meditation and the practices in daily life begin to point us to the distinction between that reactivity and a more balanced responding. So with this, just the last piece I'll say, it's 11, I just want to put this out there. In noticing this different kinds of thinking that we have, this exercise pointed to is the process of thinking, how thinking happens in your mind. It's sometimes the mind produces these images, sometimes it produces thoughts, sometimes it's as if we're speaking to ourselves. And one way to work with thoughts in meditation is, rather than acknowledging the content of the thought, to acknowledge the process by which we are thinking. So I find it really helpful to acknowledge, for instance, seeing if it's an image, hearing when it's as if I'm hearing somebody speak to me, like a radio, talking if I'm, you know, talking to myself, you know. I find it helpful to use those as labels to recognize the experience of thinking, because it does point to, what it does is it points to the process of thinking rather than the content. And process is actually what we're ultimately interested in our meditation. How things come into being, how things fall apart, the process of what happens rather than the content. And so I will leave you with that. And we'll talk about working with thoughts in daily life next week. Well, thank you.